the MadTech podcast special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello, and welcome to this week's MadTech podcast special. I'm Matt Broughton, research lead at ExchangeWire, and today we're going to be examining Web3 and media off the back of our recently published Insights and Attitudes report in association with Alchemy Exchange. To join us to talk through the report, we've got Adam Chorley, COO. Hello to you, Adam.
Hi.
And Chandru Narayana, CTO. Hello to you, Chandru.
Hello.
Great to have you both joining us. Before we kick off, it'd be great to get an introduction from you guys as to who Alchemy Exchange are for those listeners who are unfamiliar with you.
So yeah, we're Alchemy Exchange. We're the world's first decentralized ad exchange. Essentially what that means is we've taken the best of kind of blockchain infrastructure, plot that to what is kind of the traditional programmatic ad space. And the reason for doing that is that those efficiencies within the blockchain space have effectively allowed us to lower costs to both the publishers and the advertisers and just increase efficiency and give everyone a fair value exchange across the wider open web.
Perfect. So let's dive right into the findings. So the first area we covered was understanding of concepts within Web3. And generally, there was a high degree of understanding of Web3 concepts among media buyers within the UK, with an average comprehension rating of 6.7 out of 10. So my first question to you guys is, how does this match up with what Alchemy are currently seeing within the market?
So yeah, I think we've probably got Facebook to thank for that. When they changed their name to Meta, they really like fired the starting shots across like the whole industry. So there's probably a lot of CMOs at that point who didn't know what Web3 was, didn't really understand the concepts behind it. But after that, we've kind of seen a lot of people who understand what Web3 is going to sort of bring to the table, but also the kind of benefits that we kind of see within our company itself.
Awesome. Chandra, anything to add on that front?
Yeah, that is pretty much in sync with what we are seeing now. And I think it's more driven by the intent to embrace the Web3 concepts, to add value to the customers. And I think there is a little more that everybody in the ecosystem can do in order to drive home the fact that there's a lot of value that Web3 concepts can add to brands themselves. So yes, that is very much in sync with what we are seeing with our discussions with our partners as well.
Perfect. Now, one of the more interesting findings within this subset of findings is that overall surveyed agency professionals demonstrated a much greater understanding of Web3 concepts than their brand counterparts at 7.2 versus 4.5. I just wanted to get your guys' insights on what are the potential reasons for this disparity and what more can be done to bolster understanding of Web3 among brands.
I think probably within agencies, there's always a very high technical understanding of what's going on around them. If you think about programmatic advertising, it's in itself is quite technical. You have to have like detailed, even latency on websites and those kind of things. So there's probably something to do with that. I think that within a brand, you have a slightly different focus when you're talking about what your brand does. A lot of the time, it's like how your audience engages with you, like how your audience sees you, kind of product developments and how they might roll out, what your target audiences are. Whereas on an agency side, you are dealing on like a lot more of the kind of technical nuts and bolts of what advertising does and how you kind of get it into the right place at the right time for that user to see it. So it's probably kind of more to do with what people's day-to-day is, I think. That's probably like led to that disparity.
Makes sense. Chandra, anything to add on that front?
Yeah, I think to agree with what Chorley is saying in that the brand's focus has been more about adding value to their own products in order to ensure that the brands are reaching the audience that they want to target and drive value to them. So that has been their primary focus, which is to focus on their own products rather than the way in which they are actually advertised to the users. And that being the primary focus of media agencies, I think media agencies are trying to get more creative in terms of how these brands can reach the audience and how Web3 concepts can be leveraged in order to achieve that objective.
Perfect. That leads us very nicely onto our next section of findings, looking at the drivers towards increased Web3 use amongst brands and agencies. So in terms of those drivers, branding, increased transparency, and user experience and expectations were all jointly cited as the leading driver overall at 36%. And how can use of Web3 technologies foster that transparency with media buying, and what practical solutions are available to marketers today?
There's quite a lot of technical considerations that can be brought to the forefront in order to foster transparency. Like, for example, we have the concept of smart contracts, where we have triggers that actually make sure that the smart contracts operates in a certain way and without the use of intermediaries. So elimination of intermediaries is one huge advantage that Web3 concepts have brought to the advertising industry. And we know that there are quite a few links in the supply chain as far as the advertising industry is concerned. And with the use of automation, AI, and the Web3 concepts, quite a lot of these links in the supply chain can be removed and more efficient means of operations can be brought about. That is number one. The second one is once these ad transactions actually occur, they can be validated by a system of decentralized operators, which can then be notarized on a ledger that's available for anybody to view. So that brings about a certain degree of transparency as well. And not to mention the fact that there is quite a lot of data that is actually stored off the chain, which is on centralized databases. And by creating a link on and off-chain data, we can ensure that there is 100% auditability on all of the ad transactions. And I think each of these steps is extremely important in making sure that what is currently being considered as not very transparent can be improved to a very high degree.
Interesting. And zooming out onto how that kind of user experience piece is leveraged, how is that developing as the company cycle starts looking more away from Web3 and onto the more sort of, the generative AI technologies that we've seen more recently discussed?
Yeah, so I think kind of within Web3, we're seeing a lot of consumers start to get on board. And I think that especially within the sort of advertising space anyway, the dollars usually follow where the consumers are. I mean, that does actually happen within the advertising space because you're trying to find an audience. Is that through things like NFTs, collectibles, things like that, we've seen a lot more consumers kind of get involved within within the space. And as part of that, obviously, there's been a bit of a hype cycle in the media around it. People are talking about the crazy prices that some NFTs might go for, but all of that just alerts people to something that is existing already. And things are actually being built in that space that those users can go and find and interact with. And I think across the board, I've seen that there's been a kind of hype cycle that lasted for a very short amount of time, I think, with Web3, and AI is the kind of hot topic at the moment. But in reality, we haven't really seen the kind of full force of what Web3 has to offer. We've kind of only scratched the surface in terms of what's available through the infrastructure that smart contracts allow, blockchain allows. And once we kind of move further forwards, I think a lot of users are probably going to be using sort of products and services without really realizing that they're using them. So, I mean, one classic example is kind of a banking app at the moment might be using kind of traditional databases and things like that. Whereas in the future, a lot of that will be initiated through smart contracts. It will be on-chain transactions that will be available for them to see. But they won't really know any difference because the UI in front of it will be the same. I think with something like AI, it's very different. Like, users have to actually physically go interact with and then find out kind of interesting things that they didn't know before, or get it to write an essay for them, or whatever it might be. Whereas I think Web3 will actually be quite a lot more passive, kind of in the background. So now that everybody's kind of aware of it and it's kind of getting built into technology that people are using on a daily basis, I think we'll kind of see it sort of seep in quietly because it's already kind of had its big bang moment.
Yeah. Also, to add to that, I think it's not a case of either this or that. In the future, both will coexist. And as technologists, we have to ensure that at the best of both worlds, we get the value that an AI guide to an offer, and also coexist with the concepts of Web3 world, where we get the best of transparency, auditability, decentralization, and security. So we are moving towards a world where we can get the best of multiple technologies. And the key is to ensure that these are easily accessible by users, because adoption is key here. If AI or Web3 or any other technology for that matter is not usable, is not adoptable widely by the community, then there is always a problem. So while we design systems that make the best technology solutions that are available to us, we need to ensure that they are easily accessible, easily comprehensible by the target audience. And that, I think, is what we are moving towards.
Absolutely. And that reflected in our findings when looking at the cited barriers to Web3 use, where uncertainty in future use cases was the most cited at 33%, although all survey barriers polled between 23% and 33%, indicating that the market's still not necessarily on the use cases. And on that note, what more can be done to educate the market on the practical applications of Web3 that are available today, given that the theoretical understanding of core Web3 concepts is relatively high, as we've discussed?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one piece that is quite interesting is the sort of less tangible parts of Web3. So we can talk about things like blockchain infrastructure, which are very like technology driven. You have to implement that into a application or whatever it might be, but there's a lot of things around kind of community, which, you know, in previous Web2 we would have called an audience. So the way that you interact with that community is very different to the way you might talk to an audience. So if you're a brand, you would kind of normally go out and just sort of say, this is my message, this is what it is, this is how you should perceive us as a brand. When you're kind of building a community, there's more of a two-way conversation. So we use things like Discord, for example. So that is widely used at the moment. It's been very like heavily used amongst gaming communities. So we kind of, you know, think about esports and how kind of big that has become over the last few years. There's areas where people are using platforms that are kind of already Web3 ready. So going and reaching like your audience in those areas, the practical applications basically already exist. Where you go and find audience and engage with them on those platforms. So although there's kind of bits that, you know, people need to do in order to learn how to add blockchain infrastructure into the things that they do now, there are also other like applications where they or platforms that they can go and use today to go and find and engage that audience a bit better. So sometimes it is kind of more of the intangible stuff that I kind of people need to get their heads around and understand how that fits within their wider marketing. That's just a kind of planning phase thing, really. So what we do as a business is we aim to go out and talk to other businesses about the transition from Web 1 to Web 3, because only by learning what kind of Web 1 and Web 2 were can you understand the differences that exist in Web 3. So I think a lot of it is kind of really just talking about it within businesses and making sure that they understand like the both the tangible and the intangible things that they can gain from Web 3.
Yeah, that's very true. In fact, you know, we always talk about meeting the market where it is, and then educating the market as to what values Web3 concepts can actually add to their business in terms of increasing revenue, in terms of reducing costs, in terms of adding value to their customers, adding value to the ecosystem, reducing carbon emissions. There's so many things that we can talk about that Web3 concepts actually enable. And so while all of these are value systems, there is always an inertia that is involved in any business or ecosystem or users. And until we meet them where they are, and we then take them through the journey from Web2 to Web3, I think the journey becomes more difficult. So it is all about meeting them where they are, educating them about the value, making sure that the path to Web3 is as seamless and easy as possible. So, and that is where I think everybody in the ecosystem would need to strive towards making solutions, making products that are easily comprehensible, where initially we hide all of the Web3 concepts under the hood So people get used to using them without knowing the complexities of how something is being achieved, while then slowly exposing them to concepts such as Web3 wallet and NFTs and so on and so forth. But just when we throw concepts like Web3 wallets or NFTs to somebody who's not as familiar with the concepts, it can be a little daunting. So I think we need to take them through the journey, ensure that the path to Web3 adoption is as seamless and smooth as possible.
Interesting. You touched upon it there in terms of the reduction of carbon emissions. We looked at thought about the environmental impact of Web3 technologies, and it was cited by 26% of respondents as a barrier to adoption, and 41% for those with both operations in the UK and EMEA. Are those concerns over the environmental impact of Web3 technologies justified, particularly in media trading?
So I think this is quite an interesting point. So this actually comes from Bitcoin, really, and the way that works, which is a proof of work protocol. It involves a whole of like computational power to effectively mine a Bitcoin. A lot of what we do and a lot of actually most crypto runs off Ethereum, which has just moved to a proof of stake model. They've reduced the amount of emissions by a factor of 1,000, I think. So really, like when we talk about the kind of environmental impacts, like we are effectively actually wiping out extra processes within the traditional programmatic stack. So not only are we using something that's very energy efficient chain technology, we're also reducing the amount of hops that are involved, the amount of black box kind of servers that are used by various companies in the middle, and reducing that down to effectively one system that runs on, yeah, like I said, a very efficient blockchain. So I think there's probably a few misnomers around kind of what blockchain technology uses on in terms of energy. I think even when it comes to Bitcoin and its work protocol, the amount of environmental impact is reduced by the amount of renewable energy that's used. So I think compared to most countries, which have about 30 to 40% of renewable energies, I think it's around the 69 to 70% of all Bitcoin is mined on renewable energy. So even from that point of view, it's actually more energy efficient than most countries when it is actually burning any fuel at all. So I think there's kind of these ideas that have been, you know, get around in the press quite a lot without necessarily having the kind of follow-on story that tells the better version of what might have happened.
That's very true. In fact, in Alchemy, what we believe in is to eliminate unnecessary hops. And every hop that is eliminated results in more energy efficiency. So we can actually put together various processing involved in your buying into a decentralized system of nodes. And that would then ensure that not only do we achieve security, but we also have the ability to operate in a trustless manner, which means that there is no, it doesn't need to be, not every step of processing needs to be validated by somebody who is in control of that particular process. So we operate in a trustless manner, which means that, you know, there is a complete automation using Web3 concepts. And that can actually result in very high revenue for our partners by showing the same amount of ads. Or if we were to maintain the same level of revenue, then that they can be achieved by showing a drastically lower number of ads, which leads to the energy efficiency as well.
Interesting. That brings us nicely in terms of to applications within media buying itself rather than on a more general basis. And unsurprisingly, obviously, we've touched upon it earlier, but the current excitement around AI tools such as OpenAI's ChatGPT, the use of Web3 technologies alongside AI and natural language solutions was cited as one of the most promising applications within the study. How can these generative AI solutions and Web3 be used in conjunction with each other to boost marketing effectiveness?
I mean, when we look at using Web3 technologies within media, there's like you said, there's energy efficiencies to be made within that. There's just general efficiencies on a cost front. But a lot of what goes into most media budgets is planning. There's a like real human element still to planning campaigns, both from like the top down, where it's just like, okay, which channel are you going to use in the first place, which are the most effective, like to find the audience that we're looking for. A lot of that is, you know, done by people who have perfected an art effectively. And using something like generative AI, there is definitely the ability to then take what you have had as successful campaigns and then use the generative AI to help you plan better in the future. There's always that saying that I know half of my media budget is effective, I just don't know which. And using generative AI, there is definitely the possibility to actually find that out through the data points that are available. The major problem at the moment is the data points you have are very disparate. So they're spread across like multiple different platforms. They come in many different formats. The pieces of information are not necessarily compatible either. So, you know, even when you're looking at things like viewability compared to like clicks, compared to, you know, reaching your right audience, finding using a person to do to find the sort of link between those three things is virtually impossible. So using things like generative AI, there's the ability to optimize campaigns, to plan them better, to make sure that you're finding your audience in the right place, but also to make sure that that data, when you get it back in, can then also be processed in one place. So rather, again, than using multiple spreadsheets from multiple reporting platforms in multiple places, you can actually bring all of that into kind of one bucket, use a generative AI to effectively inform decision-making, whether it's pre, during, or like post-campaign.
Interesting. And in terms of those use cases in media buying, there's a high degree of interest in Web3 applications across all surveyed company sizes, but there was differences between which particular application most interested media buyers according to company size. So large companies with revenue of over £50 million were most interested in building customer loyalty for rewards. What we termed as scaling companies, so those with kind of medium-sized revenues, were most interested in building audience engagement via collectibles and via smart contracts and media transactions, while smaller firms, those with revenue under £5 million, were most interested in those AI and natural language tools. What are the potential differences, reasons for the differences between which media buying application of Web3 solutions was most taken upon by companies? Can be done to encourage those smaller brands to also engage in those loyalty building programs, either through rewards or collectibles?
Yeah, so I think that's probably more to do with what your goals are as a business, right? So if you're a big company, you have probably spent a lot of money reaching your audience, you probably have a lot of customers. So really what you're trying to do is get them to use your services more often, which is where the loyalty programs come in. They are also very expensive to run in a sort of very traditional sense. At the moment, it would currently be like a cost center for you to be running a loyalty program. Even if you're the likes of Tesco, you know, they have to sell on that data in order to like be able to run that loyalty campaign. Whereas by using kind of Web3 services, you can effectively turn that in that cost center into a profit center, because you can make money on the actual loyalty of your users. So the more often they're using it, and if they're transacting between them, I think, you know, obviously Starbucks is a great example of this. People would go and gain the rewards, and then they would sell those on to other people. Currently, or previously, Starbucks would not have made money from that. Whereas now, when that transfer is made, they can make a royalty on top of that. So there's quite a lot of reasons for you to do it as a big company. As a smaller company, you're probably looking at the efficiencies that you can make within your company. So using AI and the language tool probably allows them to reach a bigger audience than they could do currently without having kind of language experts in-house, which again is another cost that they would be bearing. So rather than it being a big outlay for them, they can use relatively cheap tools like ChatGPT or whatever to change the language that they're using to, you know, generally get them a sort of smarter marketing campaign, whatever it might be. So it's probably to do with the kind of area in which you're trying to hit the market. And with the kind of way that these tools work, they are very adaptable. They are kind of one size fits all. You just need to be able to understand what it is that you're interacting with and what the sort of outputs you can get from that as a business. So I think there's definitely an advantage for everybody. And kind of further down the line, when you know, this kind of middle companies have gained that loyalty through the collectibles and have interacted with their audience and kind of turned them into when they hit those sort of moving them up the funnel into that loyalty section. And the same goes for kind of smaller businesses. At the moment, they're probably only looking at it as a sort of cost saving. They probably haven't really thought about the way that they can then talk to their audience in a completely new way. And also just engage them through the various tools that are offered through Web3.
Yeah, and also to add to that, I think it also boils down to the risk appetite that companies are willing to have. Because some large companies may also see concepts such as smart contracts as being slightly more riskier than their traditional method of operations, because you know smart contracts by their very nature are immutable. So once it's deployed, then it's there forever for use. So that may affect an organization's risk appetite as well. So that does into the concepts that a company would want to use, whereas loyalty programs are fairly low risk, and you know they engage with the users. So it probably comes down to risk appetite as well.
Interesting. And moving on to the kind of more practical application of that, obviously you touched upon Starbucks earlier, but we also assessed how media buyers assessed NFT-based activations within the market and wider Web3 brand activations. So those NFT brand-based activations, namely Nike's Dot Swoosh and Adidas's Into the Metaverse, were ranked highest by our respondents, followed by Metaverse spaces from Coca-Cola and Gucci, followed by Chipotle's crypto giveaway and LVMH's blockchain-based authentication consortium. So we assessed a wide range of activations. How can brands which aren't endemic within highly collectible markets, such as fashion, use Web3 technology, such as NFTs, to build customer engagement?
So, I mean, those examples are, you know, very, like you said, they are fashion houses mostly. And within that, there's a kind of the collectible element. You know, any item of clothing, the thing that somebody wants to do is have the most original thing on. They want to express themselves through that. There's quite a lot of various applications that are not kind of used on any of those platforms. So when we think of like proof of attendance, for example, so things like tickets are a very good example of a way to use Web3 technology and to engage audiences. So, you know, then you kind of traditionally think about people who over the summer will collect a load of wristbands and they'll wear them for the rest of the winter as proof of what kind of festivals they went to. So it's not too dissimilar to that, using the sort of POAP for any events that you might have attended to kind of prove that you're a loyal fan of, you know, a certain band or whatever it might be. But then, you know, beyond that, there's also the ability to use an NFT as a kind of digital marker for an actual person and data off the back of it. So when you think about the way that NFTs kind of can sit in a Web3 wallet, they're effectively an on-chain marker of something, whether that is something that might be a collectible item, provide scarcity online for an item, or whether it's, you know, data about a person. So by combining these extra kind of elements of permission data that you might be able to store in a Web3 wallet, you then might be able to go and find that user again. Their Web3 wallet might be an add-on on their Chrome browser as an extension. They might be able to connect that to a website, and there you'll be able to find out more information about that user than you would have before. So there's kind of like many applications to what might at first, you know, NFTs, people just think about the image on the front end of the NFT, but behind it there is a massive store of metadata, and that is kind of information that previously would have been stored, you know, by one company on a server somewhere that they have access to. Now that is interoperable data effectively. So anywhere that you might use data within your brand engagement strategy, you can effectively use an NFT to do that. The added advantage is that you can also put a fun picture on it that some user might also like to collect. So you can kind of use both sides of it for the purpose that you want it for effectively.
That's very true. In fact, the metadata can actually drive quite a few applications for small, medium, large brands as well, irrespective of which industry they come from. One of the examples that I can think of is codes. The whole concept of discount codes is, you know, you have a discount code, and irrespective of what product you buy, or it could be product dependent as well, but if you are given a discount code, you can share it with your friends, your relatives, or whoever it is, and they will be able to use the same discount code to avail the discount. But by the use of concepts such as NFTs, an NFT can be airdropped into your wallet, and based on and you with the presence of that NFT in that wallet that you own and have connected to the site can access the discount code. So what we are doing here is to ensure that the discount is only used by the person who it was intended to. So there are applications like these that can be used. And there can also be an NFT gated mechanism where, you know, parts of the site or a few products can only be accessible by people who have a certain type of NFT. There can be access to special programs based on the NFTs that you own. So there's a wide variety of gating that we can apply using NFTs as well. So this can find applications in various industries. So all of this is just scratching the surface. You know, it's just the tip of the iceberg. So the applications that come with the metadata associated with an NFT is mind-boggling, really.
Interesting. And how, you know, what more can be done to aid with those potential applications, given that they're able to be rolled out on the market today beyond those kind of more, kind of basic NFT collectible subset?
So I think that all comes down to kind of productization, really. I think there's, us as a business, we work with another business called Agency, and there's a few others, Smart Media Technology, I think, as well, within the industry, who are kind of going to market with products for brands to use. And I think that right now, that you kind of have to build it yourself if you want it. So you have to understand what's going on. You then have to be able to find somebody to build that for you, and then you have to be able to deploy it. So, you know, I think once we kind of move through the next couple of years, things like NFTs especially are going to have like multiple use cases, and there will be like multiple people offering that in the market to multiple brands. So there'll be the interoperability will be the NFT layer, but really the kind of applications and products that will be available will be kind of offered by quite a few different companies, I think.
Interesting. That unfortunately just brings us out of time, but Adam, Chandra, it's been excellent speaking to you. Really fascinating.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And please feel free to check out the Insights and Attitudes report on the Exchange Wire site. Thank you all for listening. That was the MadTech Podcast special.